Hello, I'm Rick Cottom. Welcome to Your Maryland. From the 1780s into the 19th century, the 4th of July was the premier American holiday. Bands played, militia drilled, politicians gave overlong speeches, fireworks crackled and boomed into the night. Baltimore laid the cornerstone for the Washington Monument on July 4, 1815, and 13 years later, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, last living signer of the Declaration of Independence, laid another cornerstone, this one for the B&O Railroad. But the luster had begun to fade. In 1826, the Fredericktown Herald stopped publishing dinner toasts on the grounds that they were generally dull, insipid affairs about which few feel any interest. President Zachary Taylor ate too many fresh cherries and drank too much iced milk all at once while celebrating in 1850 and fell mortally ill. In 1853, hundreds of rowdy Baltimoreans on an excursion to Annapolis got into a fight with the locals that left two dead. Then came the War of the Rebellion and the terrible summer of 1863, when it began to look like a nation celebrated might soon become a nation only dimly remembered. The great rebel general, Robert E. Lee, brought his dusty columns north, spoiling for a fight that would end the war. Terror spread across Maryland and Pennsylvania as the rebels fanned out looking for ransom and supplies. On Wednesday, July 1st, the Army of the Potomac caught up with them at Gettysburg. All day Wednesday and into Thursday, the armies gathered their strength and sized up one another, but all anyone in Baltimore knew was that some of their sons, brothers, and husbands were in for it. Men in the Confederate 1st Maryland Battalion, the 3rd Maryland U.S. Infantry, the Potomac Home Brigade and the 1st Eastern Shore Regiment, Rigby's Battery, Brown's Chesapeake Artillery, the 1st Maryland Cavalry. By Friday, July 3rd, city papers were reporting Wednesday's news. That day, Baltimoreans also read a directive from General Robert C. Schenck, military commander in Baltimore, prescribing how the 4th of July would be celebrated. No one was to leave the city. Let every man on that day show his colors by flying the American flag from his house, Schenck ordered. If there be any spot where it does not appear, its absence there will only prove that patriot hearts do not beat beneath that roof. Within hours, large stores and small shops alike beheld a run on American flags. About 1 o'clock that Friday afternoon, those rushing to buy flags stopped what they were doing and listened, as a heavy and ominous sound, like the rumbling of a summer storm, swept over the city. 58 miles away, on Seminary Ridge, 100 Confederate guns had opened fire, and on Cemetery Ridge, 90 Federal cannon roared in reply. The resulting thunder, lasting an hour and a half, was clearly audible in Baltimore. The next day, the 4th of July went on much as Schenck had planned. Baltimoreans would not learn about places like Little Round Top, the Wheatfield, or Pickett's Charge for several more days. The city had no idea, as it celebrated the grand and glorious 4th, what had taken place at Gettysburg, or that the armies now glared at one another across a once peaceful landscape covered with thousands of dead and dying men and horses, a sight so powerful that some of those men who saw it would later go mad. But in Baltimore, there were brilliant displays of fireworks to enjoy at the intersection of Broadway and Baltimore Street, at Monument, Madison, and Union Squares, and on Federal Hill. Schenck had also lifted the order against leaving the city, at least as far as Druid Hill Park, so that loyal citizens could visit that popular and pleasant resort. American flags, if not everywhere, were abundant. That night, back in Gettysburg, as the Confederate troops were quietly trying to make their escape from the great battle, someone threw handfuls of firecrackers among the ambulances groaning with wounded. The noise stampeded the horses and spread panic among the troops. And so ended the 4th of July, 1863. Thank you.